Listening Library presents The Metropolitans by Carol Goodman. Read for you by Kathleen McInerney. Buick's Birds. The pickup went smoothly. He was sure no one had followed him to the bookstore on Fourth Avenue. The shop was deserted. The old bearded proprietor barely looked up from his Yiddish newspaper at the jingle of the bell over the door. The younger man wished, though, that the shop would get rid of the bell. Every time he heard it, he thought of alarms going off and sirens blaring. The folded paper was between pages 166 and 167 in Buick's History of British Birds. He used to worry that someone would purchase the book, but in the half-dozen times he'd been inside the store, he'd never seen another customer, let alone one who would venture beyond the lone circle of lamplight at the cash register, into the dim and murky stacks in the rear section. In fact, he'd noticed last time that the only interruption in the strip of dust along the metal shelf was in front of Buick's. He'd used his own handkerchief, carefully laundered and ironed by his sister Sophie, to wipe down the shelf, lest anyone who had followed him discover which book he had pulled out. But no one had followed him. He was sure of that. The bit of shadow he'd glimpsed on the corner of 10th Street and 4th Avenue had been only a scrap of newspaper blown by the wind. When he turned to look, there was only the steam rising from the grate in the street. On cold days, the steam looked like ghosts rising from the pavement. Only a few weeks ago, one of those ghosts had resolved into a man in a nondescript beige trench coat and a gray fedora pulled low over his face. The man who had changed his life, and he didn't even know his real name. He called himself Mr. January. The young man slipped the folded page into his right coat pocket and the $20 bill into the other and left the store. Fourth Avenue was deserted this early on a Sunday morning. He turned right and walked south to where the avenue merged with the Bowery. Here, under the shadow of the Third Avenue L, there were people, gaunt men huddled over fires burning in trash cans, passing around tin cans of coffee and the dregs of something that smelled like rubbing alcohol. One lurched into his path, holding out a trembling hand for a dime. But when the bum looked up and met his eyes, he started and shambled away as if something he'd seen there had scared him. Instinctively, the young man clutched his chest, where the book Mr. January had given him was tucked into a special pocket he had sewn into the lining. He felt its solid rectangular shape through the threadbare lining and his thin shirt, and felt warmed by it. He could have been one of these hopeless men if Mr. January hadn't picked him out and given him a mission. All he had to do was give Mr. January a little information and learn the book by heart. In case you ever have to get rid of it, Mr. January had explained, whatever you do, you must not let the book fall into the wrong hands. He crossed Houston, walked west to Mulberry Street, and turned south. Better to lose himself on the smaller streets. Not that he was being followed. If you're being followed, Mr. January had told him, you must destroy the book. That's why it's vital you memorize it. You must never let the book fall into the wrong hands. At first, he had wondered what all the fuss was about an old book. He understood why he had to be careful about the messages he received. He always burned those once he had committed them to memory. But the book, couldn't they use another if this one was lost? But no, Mr. January had explained, this one was special. There were only 5 like it in all the world, and 3 of those copies were with his companions. The 4th, Mr. January was placing in his hands, and the 5th. The 5th had been lost many years ago. He shouldn't worry about the 5th. Make sure no one got his copy. He didn't need to be told twice. Once he began using the book, he had grown attached to it. He slept with it under his pillow at night. He would sooner die than let it fall into enemy hands. He wound a serpentine path through the streets between Houston and Canal before coming to the cafe. Mr. January had told him he should vary the location where he read the messages, choosing large, anonymous places such as libraries, churches, or men's rooms in train stations. But in this one thing, he followed his own wishes. The cafe was very quiet on a Sunday morning, most of its usual patrons at church. There were only the ancient waiter wiping down the marble counter, the baker in the back preparing the bread and pastries for the old Italian grandmothers who would come after Mass at the Church of the Most Precious Blood, and one white-haired old man in a rusty black suit sipping espresso. He always chose the same table, in the back by the window, so he could watch the street and the door. If he hadn't been able to get that table, or if there had been anyone sitting close to it, he would have gone on to the Tompkins Square Library, where there was a desk hidden in the stacks that was private, or to Precious Blood after Mass, where he could sit in a darkened pew. But there was only an old man reading one of the Italian newspapers that were kept on wooden racks by the door. He helped himself to a copy of Corriere della Sera and nodded to the waiter behind the marble bar, indicating he would have his usual. He sat down at the little marble table and, after checking the street, took out the book. The leather felt warm and slightly spongy, damp even. Had he allowed it to get wet? The idea made his heart race. But when he laid his hand on the cover, he felt calmer. No, the book always felt like this. It must be a feature of the leather it was bound with, whatever kind that was. Deerskin, perhaps. It was so old that the gold stamp on the cover was almost too faded to make out, but he knew what it represented because the same image appeared on the first page of the book, which he turned to now. A quartered shield that contained a sword, a cup, a crown, and an ocean wave. After the waiter had brought him his espresso and cornetto and gone back behind the bar, he took out the folded page. He unfolded it carefully and laid it flat on the table. It was the longest message he had received yet. The page was crammed tight with minuscule handwriting, all of it encoded, divided into five sections. The first section, headed by a picture of the quartered shield, and the other sections each headed by one of the symbols inside the shield, and a number. He knew that each symbol corresponded to a section of the book, and he'd have to use that part of the book to decode that part of the message. His fingers itching at the thought, he took out the good fountain pen his father had given him when he graduated from university. This must be it. He'd proved himself to his masters, and now he was being entrusted with a special mission. He could hardly wait to wrest the message, his mission, from the pages. But he knew it was more important now than ever to remain calm and be careful. He looked at the first symbol, a shield. He knew that each section of the book was marked by a symbol on the shield. Only on the last page of the book, the epilogue, did the shield appear again. He knew the epilogue by heart. To test his memory, he closed his eyes and recited the words to himself. At long last, Arthur returned to Camelot with his companions, and they resumed their lives there, never telling anyone of the strange adventure they had shared in the Huon Wood and the Maiden Castle, or the grave portents told to them by the Lady of the Lake. They kept their secret through the terrible years that followed, through war, betrayal, exile, and death, for they knew that in the end, whatever they lost would be restored to them when they were reunited on the Isle of Avalon. And whenever great evil arose in the world, four brave knights would arise in their names to vanquish it. That last bit always gave him courage. Wasn't he like a knight of times gone by on a sacred quest? Reassured, he opened his eyes. and caught the old
sample complete. Ready to continue?